Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a live edition of the podcast. This is your host, Derek Felix of the Hardhits Network. And this is the podcast, so this is a little different format. What I will do is just discuss some big sports happenings on July 30th as we hit July 31st and the Major League Baseball trade deadline, which is, I believe, 4 o'clock Eastern time today. So, let's get to it. Nationals finally decided to make Bryce Harper available. And quite frankly, I don't understand why they waited so long. I mean, it was pretty obvious that it wasn't their season. There's dissension in the ranks, and it sounds like it's a toxic atmosphere. It has not worked out with Buck Martinez replacing Dusty Baker, a guy who won 2 division titles and a proven manager. Even if you want to critique Dusty for some of his shortcomings in October, he knew how to keep together and he knew how to get to the playoffs. Now, Buck Martinez, I didn't really understand the hire to begin with. But, and then you look at the Nationals and you look at the talent that they have, and it's just amazing how badly they have underperformed. That includes Bryce Harper, free agent to be, with his .220 batting average. I could care less about the rest of the statistics of how many walks he has. .220 and a .4 wins above replacement is embarrassing for him, especially a guy with his talent, a guy that's won the MVP, a guy that's hit .330 and 42 home runs. Back in 2015, 99 RBIs. He's never driven in 100, but he's been over 1,000 in the OPS department twice throughout his career. Could have possibly set some new career highs in 2017 in both home runs, RBIs, and maybe even batting average. He might have won MVP last year if he didn't miss some time. But it is what it is. And Bryce Harper, you know, whether you like him, hate him, or in between, Bryce Harper is a polarizing athlete. He is not squeaky clean like Mike Trout. He is not as consistent as Mike Trout. He has a lot of talent, certainly. But we've seen Bryce Harper not hit for average before, like in 2016, when he only hit .243. And so that was very disappointing for him. So this guy is an immense talent, and I think he should be a 40 to 45 home run guy who knocks in 120, 130. And let's face it, he's actually come up short. So when they try to put him with Mike Trout, it's really no contest. Okay, Mike Trout is there by himself on a pedestal at the mountaintop, and everybody else is behind him, including my guy, Mookie Betts, who I think has the inside track for the AL MVP, out of that leadoff spot for the Red Sox, along with the Indians' Jose Ramirez, who had 2 more home runs, and continues his chase, and it looks like he's going to hit 40-plus home runs and have 30 stolen bases, and that's something that's a rarity these days. And J.D. Martinez. So, I mean, you pretty much know who your MVP candidates are and where they're coming from. So, I pretty much broke it down for you. But in terms of Bryce Harper, he's not going to return to Washington. To D.C., I should say. Because it's D.C., really. It's really the District of Columbia. So, he's not likely to return. He wants millions and millions of dollars. And the Nationals, they actually can plan ahead. especially when you look at what Soto has done, the leading candidate for the NL Rookie of the Year. Apologize. And with the 14 or 15 home runs over a 300 average. And they've also got Trey Turner, who was a terrific ball player. They have Adam Eaton, who was also a really good guy at the top of the order. He stays healthy. And they certainly gave up a lot for him when they traded with the White Sox, although most of the players have not panned out. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, Victor Robles is supposed to be another one of those top prospects that should be very exciting to watch. And he is the future center fielder for the Nationals. And he's only 21, 22 years of age. But, even on Victor Robles, I mean, they should have made Bryce Harper available a week ago. They should have listened to offers. They should have gotten into better discussions. To make him available the night before the deadline is just silly. I mean, I understand they wanted to take their best shot here. They thought that they could still win the NL East, and who knows? Stranger things have happened, and it's the Phillies that they're chasing. The Phillies, who are a year ahead of schedule, and the Braves, who, even though they've slumped lately, they're still behind them as well in the wild card chase. But if you know that your chances aren't good when it comes to re-signing a superstar like Bryce Harper, and you're not a lock for the playoffs, and there has been really no indication from this team that they can put it all together when there's been bickering between teammates. We saw it with Scherzer, and we saw it with Strasburg, who was on the DL again. It's basically his whole career, and they gave him so much money. They could pay him like $175 million. It just never really made much sense. So, and that's the thing about this team. They have a lot of guys who are up for unrestricted status, including Daniel Murphy, who came back from a very tough injury and surgery, and it's taken him a little time. He's starting to get the timing back, but he's going to be unrestricted, and he's not going to be back. And they have all these guys out of the bullpen, and they failed miserably. So, you know, maybe they should have made some of these guys available sooner. But then they're going to make your superstar right fielder, who has not played like a superstar this year. He's not acted like a superstar when he's throwing. He's throwing the team under bus by saying, indicating basically the other day after they lost to the Marlins on a walk-off hit by JT Realmuto, you know, that basically hinting that, you know, it wouldn't have happened if they had JT Realmuto. What comment is that from Bryce Harper? I mean, really. And look, I know Bryce Harper has the ego, and he's self-serving. He is self-serving. I don't care what you can say, but that is just a ridiculous comment, and it's just uncalled for, and it's classless. And to read some of the stuff that I read in Jeff Passan's Yahoo Major League Baseball column, it was pretty disappointing. But it's not surprising that there is, you know, we've seen some of the frustration with the Nats, and now Bryce Harper is available. Well, good luck. I mean, because it's not going to be the Yankees for sure. I don't think it's going to be the Dodgers either. It's definitely not going to be the Phillies. The Indians, of course, have a lot of interest. I bet they wish they didn't give up or part with their top prospect, catcher Francisco Mejia, just to get Brad Hand to the Padres. I bet they wish they had held on to him, because the Nats can use that kind of young catching prospect. But who knew? Who knew that Bryce Harper would finally be made available? There was no indication that was going to happen, but it has. And I don't think the Nats are going to be able to get the offer they want. I don't think they're going to be able to get the return that they want. And they're going to just watch Bryce Harper leave. And yeah, they'll make a qualifier. You know, they'll qualify him and they'll get the draft pick, but boy, do they look really stupid, and do they have egg on their faces? An embarrassment in Washington, D.C. So, and maybe, just maybe, a franchise that is jinxed. Just maybe. Maybe they are. So, now, as far as the rest of the trade deadline, there really isn't a lot else to be had out there. Teams are still probably actively searching for arms. Yeah, even a dead arm, if they could find one, they'll look for an arm. And it's basically an arms race, whether it's the Red Sox, the Eovaldi edition, seven scoreless innings and a great debut, or the Yankees with J.A. Happ giving up a little more, and J.A. Happ with a very successful debut. The arms race is very real, and teams are just looking for any kind of pitching help that they could get. The Yankees made a couple of moves yesterday, one being that they traded Adam Warren, the long man, to the Seattle Mariners for $1.5 million international signing bonus money. They've been subtracting some guys from the pen because they have so many guys out of the pen. They have so much depth. They really do, between Robertson, Betances, and of course they added Britton and Chapman and Chad Green, who has looked a little bit off lately. I mean, you could go on and on, you know, with how many guys they have out of this bullpen. And Tommy Kahnle will take probably or he could when getting recalled and take the place of Adam Warren, who was a really good Yankee both times that he came here. So wish him the best of luck, obviously. The first time around, he was real solid, and he could also spot start before he got traded for in the package for Starlin Castro, who was also a good Yankee. And then the second time around, Adam Warren was dealt back by the Cubs, along with that guy, Gleyber Torres and Billy McKinney, and I think one other player, to rent Aroldis Chapman and win their one world championship in the last century. And then Chapman wound up re-signing with the Yankees anyway. So you have to say that Brian Cashman's had a really great run lately. You know, maybe the Sonny Gray deal, that might be the exception to the rule. Well, Sonny Gray has shown some signs of pitching a little bit better, but we still have to see him do it against a really good team. So that's the better lineup. We don't know how that's going to pan out. But the Yankees also did add Lance Lynn from the Minnesota Twins. They really didn't give up much. I mean, Tyler Austin, who hit a bunch of home runs early in the season, he gave a nice contribution. You have to say that. I mean, I understand that he's not the greatest hitter, but I'll tell you, I mean, he did a nice job at first before Greg Bird finally got on track. Tyler Austin, you know, gave a nice contribution. And Tyler Austin is a switch hitter, and he'll go to the Twins for Lance Lynn. And I hope that Tyler Austin can stick over there in Minnesota. I mean, that's the best I could wish for him. You know, he hit 8 home runs in his 121 at-bats in 34 games, 23 runs knocked in. I mean, the .223 average, notwithstanding the 53 strikeouts and 8 walks, notwithstanding. But good for him. I hope he does get an opportunity. I'll get probably more of an opportunity there. I understand he wasn't hitting that much in Scranton and Wilkes-Barre. I hope that works out for him. He gave a nice contribution and a good account of himself, and good luck to him. Same thing with Adam Warren, who will now try to help the Mariners close down that second wild card against the Oakland Athletics, who they lead by about a game and a half. So, good luck to both of them. You're seeing a lot of teams load up on international money. And, I mean, you saw the Mets do it also with Familia, and that was the main part of the trade with the Oakland Athletics, because they really didn't get much back for Jeurys Familia. And, I mean, that was a real disappointing return, but they did get $1 million in the international money. And Omar Minaya is the guy that's supposed to retool things and fix the Mets system and do the scouting Elmer Minaya is very good at evaluating talent, so we'll see what happens there. So I'll stick with the Mets for just 1 second here. Zach Wheeler has been the Mets' second-best pitcher this year. And he's pitched great for about 2 months. He pitched very well. He pitched 7 shutout innings or 8 shutout innings the other day in a win over the Pirates. And Wheeler even drove in the only run in the game. Wheeler is an interesting guy. Zach Wheeler is 28 years old. And Zach Wheeler is a guy that's obviously boosted his stock when all war now. And only 5 wins in here, but his ERA to 4.11, and he's done it with about a very solid stretch of about 7 to 8 weeks, and less hits than innings pitched now. The walks are still, a little bit high. The 42 walks in 120 innings, that's okay. Every 3 innings or so, 116 strikeouts, so he's basically a strikeout per inning. And he's been healthy, and that's what he talked about. He emphasized that after, a start, recently about being healthy, and he hasn't been healthy, and he missed 2 seasons, and that really hurt him. And so, you go from a 24-year-old who looks like he's got all the potential in the world in 2014 when he won 11 games and struck out 187, to a guy that was a question mark and seemed to be struggling and struggled last year when he came back and started off this year very poorly. And it looked like he was just going to be a bust. And they were never going to get – he was never going to amount to what they thought he would amount to. The former Giants first-round pick in 2009, who they stole for Carlos Beltran, who was a rental for the Giants. And it looked like it just wasn't going to work out for him. But he is 28, and he's matured, and he's learned how to pitch. And he deserves a lot of credit, a ton of credit. So Zach Wheeler, I definitely tip my hat to you. And if he stays, it's because the Mets are not going to get the offer that they want. They think that they should get more from him. Some teams might be a little skeptical because of his injury history. But, he has been healthy this year. And a team like the Milwaukee Brewers should definitely ante up and get a Zach Wheeler, because I think they wanted him what? What was it, like 2-3 years? It was 3 years ago when they thought they had a trade where they were getting Zach Wheeler and Wilmer Flores for Carlos Gomez. That would have been a great trade. And instead it fell apart because of Carlos Gomez's physical, and the Mets wound up trading for Cespedes, and that worked out a lot better for the New York Mets. So, but it's nice to see Zach Wheeler be able to bounce back. Anybody who's had injuries or played sports. I didn't have the kind of injuries that Zach Wheeler had, but I ran track in high school, and I ran cross country, and I was a long distance runner, and I had fasciitis, and it was a really painful injury, and certainly had a negative effect. I didn't really do much. I didn't run any races in my senior year. That sucked. It really sucked because I loved running, and I still feel it in my heel. Because I never did the surgery, and I did cortisone shots, and eventually I found pads that were a lot cheaper from Dr. Scholl's than some of the orthotics that my parents spent money on, a lot of money, like $400, that didn't do anything for me and didn't make me feel any more comfortable. So, but anybody who's been through injuries, like Zach Wheeler, and he's able to come back, and you got to feel pretty good for him. So, I don't know if the Mets are going to be able to make the trade that they want, but I'll tell you one thing: the Mets think they're just going to go back and contend next year because if they keep all 4 of their starters. But you know what? Are they crazy? They don't have a lot of talent at the position. They need position players. They don't have much in their minor league system. They don't have a young catcher, that can really get it. They lost on Travis Darnell. At least Syndergaard worked out, and Syndergaard now is becoming more and more of a question mark when you see what's happened with him. It's just really strange. Although I still think Syndergaard is the real deal. But what is their plan exactly? You know, obviously they do have the one guy, Peter Alonso, who they expect to be their first baseman, and maybe I would project him as a full-time starter by 2020. I think that would be fair. He looks a lot better than Dominic Smith, who just doesn't seem to have the discipline or the desire for some reason. And I don't understand how that could be for a young player, but we saw Oficio's Montero, a guy that I supported forever, and he didn't have the desire. So you have to have the desire and the willpower, you know, if you want to make it, you know, as far as making it in the bigs, make it to the majors. So, and I'm not really sure what they're thinking, you know, but hey, they are who they are, and they obviously, you know, they obviously see something that a lot of other people don't. I mean, yeah, I'm sure Conforto will come back and be much better next year. And but I'll tell you, the Mets seem to really overvalue some of their players. So yeah, it's really odd. It's very odd. And it's odd that Jose Reyes remains on their roster. Maybe they just don't want to release him. They want him to finish his career as a Met and retire at the end of the year, maybe. I mean, maybe that's why he stays on the roster. I've heard a lot of Mets fans with their frustration. But I think that they just don't have the heart to waive him or say goodbye that way. But I think they want Jose Reyes to play at home and for him to get at least a nice send-off, a nicer send-off, because fans have been pretty mean to him. Amad Rosario is still a work in progress and still inconsistent defensively. Devin Mesoraco could be getting moved, and what was the point of training for him? Matt Harvey looks like he's going to stay with the Reds because he's pitched better for them. Todd Frazier has been hurt all year, and he never had problems with injuries before, but now he goes to the Mets, and boom. So, I mean, what do the Mets have exactly? They traded Cabrera. That was a good move for them to make. Trading him to the Phillies, although they got a prospect back that's got a little bit of control issue. What do they have? They've got what? Nemo, who has cooled considerably, and I like Brandon Nemo, but you have to remember, he's still only in his second full year. You know, he's 25. I expect him to get better and improve. They have Conforto, who was hit awfully for the Mets. Power's starting to come back a little bit. Maybe because of the injury last year and the surgery, maybe that was more of an effect than they expected. Jose Bautista, who they like to trade, who has been okay for them, but they like to trade him and move him. They have Rosario, who is up to 241. He's got six triples, but he remains puzzling. But he's 22 years old. But there's really not much else on this roster. So, and then they have the whole Cespedes situation and Jay Bruce, and both have been disasters. So I don't understand what the New York Mets are thinking. So I spent a lot more time on the Mets than I thought I would. But it is what it is. Now, we've got basically a few minutes left here. You know, with the trade deadline, as players have gotten moved, most of the players have basically moved already. I saw that the kid from Texas, Keola, got moved to the Pirates. Pirates decided to get some bullpen help because they're chasing a wild card. They still think they can. And so, I mean, who knows? But there have been a few moves. There's nothing really earth-shattering when I think about it. Nothing that just really stands out. So, with that, I'll wrap it up. I see the Red Sox want to get a walk-off hit. What else is new? Hopefully the Marlins do hold on to JT Romero, or they're just a joke, and Derek Jeter is as big a joke as I thought he was, being, you know, a minority, whatever he is, majority owner there. Lance Lynn's been terrible this year for the Twins. I understand he had a 3.78 ERA over the last 12 games. Let's just hope that it's the second Lance Lynn, because he was a disaster for the Twins after they traded for him. And you know, he's been a pitcher before. He's been a good pitcher before, but who knows? Who knows? Hopefully it works out. Maybe Cashman knows something that we don't. I've covered, you know, quite a bit here. Yankees are 6 behind the Red Sox. They have the big 4-game series starting on Thursday. What the Yankees need to do is they need to win the 2 games against the Orioles. But there's rain in the forecast again, which means who knows if they'll get both games in. There's going to be rain later today. There's going to be rain Wednesday. My guess is they'll get the game in on Tuesday and Wednesday. Your guess is as good as mine. So they might be having to make up another game. So go figure. And then they got the Red Sox for 4 in Boston. And 4-game series in Boston are always great theater. Even if they are 6 games back or they are 4 in the loss column, whatever it is. Then you get to find out, you know, can they still maybe give themselves a shot? Maybe giving themselves the shot to possibly chase down Boston. They're going to have to win 3 out of 4 or maybe even win all 4 to give themselves a chance. Win 3 out of 4. You know, if you win 3 out of 4, that's doing something. So if you win 3 out of 4, that'd be pretty good. So because then you could chop down 2 games and that would help. And then you still have games to make up. But remember, they're without Gary Sanchez. As much as I critique him, he is an important player. And Austin Romine's been terrific as the backup catcher. And, boy, he probably could start on some rosters. And they're still without Aaron Judge. Now, are the Yankees going to add an extra outfielder? Is it because Curtis Granderson going to have a reunion with the Yankees? And this is a big possibility. I'm going to say yes. It doesn't make any sense for him to stay in Toronto and I could see Toronto just come to the Yankees. Or you want to come to where this is? Do you like to go back to New York? I think that will happen. So I'll make a prediction and say Curtis Granderson will become a Yankee, even though I like Cameron Mabian for his speed. But he's also an already bat, and I think he'd be perfect extra outfield. I think Granderson could be in a reunion just with his lefty bat. And people love the Grandy man. So that's my prediction there. We're going to do some more on the podcast, the extra, and it will be mostly, I'm going to talk Kevin Hayes, New York Rangers, his 1-year contract, which I don't understand, and Sam Darnold and Jets. So that's the podcast, and get ready for overtime here. So we're about to hit overtime. Welcome back to the Hard Hits, the podcast, the edition here. Derek Felix here, standing on New York City. On a nice, cool, 70-ish degree night. So, with rain in the forecast. Did a lot, of course, on the baseball, on the trades, and the trade deadline, and some of the moves that have been made. And I know the Boston Red Sox did also add Ian Kinsler. Is it from the text thread? Yeah, actually, I think it is. Yeah, so Ian Kinsler, it's for Tigers. I can't even think. I can't remember which team he played for, but it was the Tigers. Well, anyway, Ian Kinsler, you know, of course, still has he came with the Angels. What the hell am I saying? That's right, he was with the Angels last. Kinsler's bounced around, but he's been hitting a little bit better of late. Ian Kinsler is a well-respected veteran, a guy that can certainly fill in at second base for the Red Sox, a guy that's still trying to chase down a championship himself. He's been in the playoffs before, of course, with the Texas Rangers, and he's almost at the end of the line. Izzy and Kenzo, everybody's a well-respected player, a guy that's been an all-star, 36 years old, a likable guy, a guy that plays with a lot of grit, and amazingly enough, a long time ago, he signed an 11-year contract worth $102.5 million with the Texas Rangers. And he was really something, you know, with Texas for a long time. He was a cornerstone there. You know, it's very interesting when you look at Ian Kinsler, because you look at Ian Kinsler, he's only hitting .239, I think. Yeah, he still has a 2.5 wins above replacement, which tells you he can still play the position of second base, and he's got 13 home runs. He still hits for a little bit of pop. So if you don't like Ian Kinsler, I don't think you like baseball. Ian Kinsler can do a few things. He can still steal some bases. He can steal a base once in a while. He can hit for some pop. He can give you a solid second. And you know, the Red Sox needed to make a little bit of an upgrade. I thought it would be Asdrubal Cabrera, but he wound up going to the Phillies, oddly enough. I thought it was either going to be the Brewers for Asdrubal or the Red Sox. I picked them to go to the Red Sox, but it didn't happen. I guess Whit Merrifield is not getting traded by the Royals, the Omaha Royal Crown. Whit Merrifield, 29 years old, the gritty player, a guy who makes contact with the ball, steals bases, plays good defense, just a fundamentally sound player, a little bit of a late bloomer. But Ian Kinsler is a nice addition to the Sox. I don't know what the deal is with Dustin Pedroia, but that's a solid move for the Red Sox. Now, this is the extra portion of the podcast edition of the show, and it's a little bit just a special podcast edition. I'm just going to touch base on a couple of other things that are happening. The Rangers decided to re-sign Kevin Hayes. They settled on 1-year contract for $5.125 million with Kevin Hayes, the solid overall center that is their best even strength forward. It's not close either. When you look at the improvements that Kevin Hayes made and how he's always been really solid at even strength, and last year, you know, with the 44 points, 34 came at even strength and another two shorthanded goals, which led the club because he was part of their top penalty kill with Michael Grabner before he was traded and moved to Devils, where he failed. But and that happens sometimes. But, different systems. You know, sometimes things just change. But Kevin Hayes has been a solid Ranger. He changed my mind. There were at times I was frustrated because of the lack of shots, and he was always very pass happy and didn't perform all that great in the playoffs, and so there was criticism, and it comes with territory when you play in New York City, when you're a New York Ranger, and our fan base is very divided, and there's going to be criticism. But I watched the way Alain Vigneault, who certainly earned his dismissal, and will now probably do some guesswork probably on TSN or wherever he winds up. The one player that I thought he handled much better last year was Kevin Hayes. I decided to give Kevin Hayes a boost. I decided to make him a matchup center. Kevin Hayes, who's always been good at even strength, a strong position player with the length and the skating, and it made sense. And with Derek Stepan moved to the Coyotes, somebody had to try to take the place Derek Stepan, so he turned to Kevin Hayes, and Kevin Hayes did not disappoint. Yeah, maybe the scoring and the production was a little bit down. Maybe that kind of suffered because of he had to face tougher matchups. You read some of the reaction to Kevin Hayes, and you would think that the Rangers had like a 70 point score, or like two 70 point scores and a 40 goal score. They didn't even have a 30 goal score, and their leading point getter was Matt Zuccarello with 52 points, and he was terrible down the stretch. I just don't get it sometimes. I don't get it. Matt Zuccarello logged the most time out of all the forwards, of course, with like almost 19 minutes where he just became a very pass-oriented player. And look, I've loved Max Grillo as a Ranger. He gives you the heart. He doesn't back down from anybody. But he became a little bit of a one-trick pony. And a lot of point production on the power play, certainly. Zuccarello has been a bargain, though, with the $4.5 million entering his final season. He'll be 31 in September. And it could be the end of an era for Matt Zuccarello and the New York Rangers. I would expect them to possibly trade him. As far as Kevin Hayes goes, Kevin Hayes is 26. He's in his prime. He just finished his fourth season. Set a career high with 25 goals and 172 shots on goal, believe it or not, were also a career high. He's never really been a big shooter. He's more selective, but I saw some post-game interviews where he said that he needs to shoot the puck more, and you know what happened? He struck the puck more in the second half, and guess what? His goal scoring went up, and he turned around a very disappointing year. But he was also facing tough competition, and he didn't rack up as many assists because there weren't a lot of players put in the puck in the net, and the defense sucked. So there were a lot of issues with the system, with the confusing play. But I'll tell you what, Kevin Hayes was not one of them. He was a bright spot. I said it before, and I'll say it again. You can follow me if you follow me at New York Puck on Twitter. Or you follow my blog, newyorkpuck.com, newyorkpuck.com. And you can read my pieces and my take on Kevin Hayes. And I think I would have gone for it. I would have re-upped him. I understand that, you know, going 5-6 years at possibly $6 million AAV average per year is a pretty big bump up for Kevin Hayes, but if you look at what he brings to the table, I mean, he's the top penalty killing center. He's the top check. He's the top. Well, he's not really a checking center. Yeah, he's a checking center where they say, oh, he's a third line center. No, he's their second line center, okay, who happens to draw the tough assignments. He was over 50% last year on faceoffs. Not bad for a guy that's in his fourth year that wasn't a center to begin with. No, Derek Stepan never hit 50%. And he was always a center. And Hayes has got a little more length. He's shown the ability. And the 34 even strength points, and 36 of his 44 points were either 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 or shorthanded, whereas the other 8 points were on the power play, and where he saw a little bit of increase in the last 2 months and still wound up with a career high 6 power play goals. Career highs in goals, shots on goal, shorthanded goals with the 2 leading the team after he had, I think, 6 or 7 shorthanded points in 16-17. Tied his career high in game winners with 4. And here's the catch. Kevin Hayes, you go ahead. You know, I'm not a big believer in the Corsi, but I'll tell you what. Go and look at his zone start times. Yeah, he started in the defensive end over 57% of the time as compared to, you know, a paltry 43 or 42.7. So, and he still wound up a +1, and he still, his relative Corsi was a -0.5. So that's not too bad, -0.5. So, and you look at how well he did at even strength. And there were some nights where, you know, his line didn't have it, where he went up against some really tough competition. And it happens sometimes. It happens. You're not going to be great every night. It's really hard over 82 games to do that. And Kevin Hayes, what, he played 76 last year? I'll tell you what, he's an important player. So when they decide to just, oh, we're just going to give you a 1-year contract and, you know, they're basically saying, oh, we're just going to throw you away. You're not going to be part of our future, boy. And I totally disagree with it. You know, at least give him a 2-year contract and say, you know, maybe we should be a little more patient and not have such unrealistic expectations with our young players. When you talk about Elias Anderson, who I like, who looks like he could fit that player or fit that mold eventually, and Filipetu, who's got, looks like he's got a little more offensive upside and skill. You know, so you got the gritty guy, and you've got the little, you got a guy who looks a little bit more skilled, and you know, maybe potentially a top line guy if it works out for him. But I understand they're committed to the rebuild, but I think their expectations are a little high, or maybe it's too high. Maybe they're right. Maybe they'll be proven right. But I'll tell you what, it would not be easy to replace Kevin Hayes. And what the hell are they going to do? They're going to make him available at the trade deadline next year along with Matt Zuccarello and just get a late first-round pick or whatever they get for him because he's a rental, or they just got to let him walk and just toss him away? I don't know. I think Kevin Hayes is poised to have an even better year in 2018-2019. I can't believe I'm saying 2018-19, but that's where we are. You know, that's where we are. We're not in the 2000s anymore. We're in the 2010s, and we're almost at 2020. But I'll tell you what, Kevin Hayes was only 5 off his career best of 49 points that he put in, up in 16-17 before he had his role changed. So you're telling me now, more defined role, a little bit of a possibly better system under David Quinn, the rookie coach, that Kevin Hayes isn't going to put up even better numbers? He's not going to be able to go 50 to 55 points. I think he could take it to 55 points. I don't know if he'll get 25 goals again, but I'll tell you what, I think the assists will be up. I definitely do. I mean, his role will be better. He'll get more consistent power play time. He'll be on that top penalty kill, probably, if Jesper Fast, the other guy who had some really good production at even strength, but doesn't really get the credit that the other guys get. You know, a lot of people might take this the wrong way. I understand he's been the guy. He's the reason why they were the number one reason why they competed for cups, or competed, you know, they competed once for the Stanley Cup against the Kings. And he's taken them to 3 conference final fours. I'm talking about Eric Lundqvist, of course. But the Stephen McDonald Extra Effort Award isn't about the most popular player. It should be about the player who gives the best effort. And you know who gave the best effort last year? Kevin Hayes. And I voted for Kevin Hayes. And Kevin Hayes deserved to win the award over Eric Lundqvist. And everybody else is just kidding themselves that they think Eric Lundqvist deserved the award. Why? Because he gave his heart and soul, because of all the fits that he threw, where he threw his teammates under the bus. That's not a good teammate. And I understand he's frustrated because he's so used to, you know, winning games and having regular season success. But you know what? He also needs to be a little more mature and a little more patient. Last year wasn't their year. And he better show a little more maturity and a little more backbone in 18-19, because the expectations are pretty low right now. And unless they just pull a 2005-2006 and everything just falls right into place, and Brady Shea lights it up on the top pair with Kevin Shattenkirk and Elias Anderson works out, and Filipetto puts up 35-40 points, and Pucinavich all of a sudden shoots the puck more and winds up with 23 goals and 35 assists and 58 points, and all this stuff happens, and the second pair works out, and Neil Pionk proves that he can be a second pair guy, and Brendan Smith puts up better numbers, and Henrik Lundqvist turns back the clock and puts up a 2.50 or 2.48 goals against and a 9.19 save percentage and records like more than 2 shutouts. They're not going to be a playoff team because they're in a damn good division and a lot of teams improved. And look, if they're really committed to this rebuild process, then it's going to take time. So I want people to understand. I also want other people to understand this. Banajad is a better offensive talent than Kevin Hayes. He can score more goals, and he's got that right-handed shot, and he's terrific on that off wing right there, where he could just wire that one time or hit top twine with it, with the wrist shot. but he's not missing the net. And he scored 14 power play goals last year, which was his career best. 14 of his 27 goals came via the power play. And his even strength numbers weren't great. He only recorded 12 assists via even strength. And that's supposed to be your number one center. And his plus minus was a minus 23. He wasn't going up against the top scoring lines all the time. That was Kevin Hayes. And Kevin Hayes wound up plus one. You know who else was a plus? A big plus? Michael Grabner. Those are the only two regulars that actually were on the plus side of the ledger. So next time you think Mika Zibanejad is this quote-unquote number one center, well, he's going to have to do a better job at 5-on-5. I hate to break it to you, but he has to. He can't be no minus 23 next year, all right? Matt Zuccarello can't take shifts off or not cover guys because there were too many instances like that where he had giveaways or did not back check. And Matt Zuccarello knows better than that. And I'm not questioning his effort. I think the guy always gives effort. But there were some times where it happened, okay? It did. So I think Kevin Hayes is a little more important than the Rangers do. And I'm not so sold on Ryan Spooner, who also is a year away from unrestricted status. I'm sure he'll just get a one-year deal, get around the same money that Mestikov got, about $4 million, with the arbitration hearing, I think, August 3rd. Mestikov, they bridged Mestikov 2 years, $8 million. I mean, hey, they're taking a chance there. You know, yeah, he came back in the Ryan McDonough, JT Miller deal, along with those two prospects that they like a great deal, Lieber Hayek, the defenseman Hayek, and Brett Howden, was the brother of Quentin Howden, who didn't really make it as an NHLer, but Brett Howden is only 20 years old. And yeah, maybe Brett Howden will impress him. Yeah, he's 20. So unless they know something that I don't know, I just wouldn't be so quick to dismiss Kevin Hayes. Purple Hayes is better than I thought. I was a critic. I was one of his biggest critics because sometimes there were shifts where he wondered what the hell he was thinking. But you know what? I changed my tune, and I saw JT Miller sleepwalk a lot more than Kevin Hayes, and that's why JT Miller wound up an ex-Ranger. And we even saw it with JT Miller again in the playoffs where he couldn't score goals and kind of made some head-scratching decisions. Well, maybe it wasn't just Alain Vigneault, and he got taken off the Stamkos Kucherov line. So I've come around on Kevin Hayes because I see some real positives. Is he a $6 million player? I mean, of course, you know, most people would say no, but I'll tell you what. I think Kevin Hayes is a better player than I thought and that most fans think because all they do is look at stats. The statistics don't always tell the whole story. And when your team can't put pucks in the net and your leading scorer only has 52 friggin' points, which is only 8 more than Kevin Hayes when he went up against the toughest competition, what the hell does that tell you? It tells me that a lot of people are very biased and are not looking at things rationally. And I'm being rational here. So I would like to see Kevin Hayes stay. I like to see how Kevin Hayes lights it up, and I hope that he increases his value and really makes it a tough decision for Gordon and company and Sather since he's still there as president. So that's how I feel about it. Do the Rangers have more center depth? They absolutely do. What about their scoring? Who else is going to put pucks in the net aside from Chris Kreider? And hopefully Kreider will stay healthy and get 30 goals that I think he will get and put up 60 points because I think he can do it and I think his head's finally screwed on straight. I think things changed for him. I think he looked at it a little differently after he had that resection after the blood clots. I think that had an effect, a positive effect. You know, he seemed to finally get it and he developed pretty well under AV. You know, you could say what you want about Vigneault and the job that he did here, but you know what, Chris Kreider with the net front presence, he developed even better. So I have to give credit where it's due, and I'm just hoping, I'll keep my fingers crossed that Chris Kreider can stay healthy for a full 82, because I'd like to see what I'm a believer. I'm always going to be a believer in Chris Kreider. He's only got 2 more years left on his contract, and once those 2 years are up, oh man, I do not want to see him become a former Ranger. I like to see him be here as part of the future. And let's say Mika Zibanejad does put up 32, 33 goals next year and stays on the ice, because health has been a problem for him too in his first 2 seasons. Not concussion symptoms. Look, that happens. That's tough when that happens, all right? You know, the first year, that was a freak injury too. Hopefully Zibanejad can play close to 80 games. Because, yeah, I do think he could put up 30 goals, and I think he could put up 65-plus points. But you know what? What if Kevin Hayes puts up 55 points and makes a 11-point leap and proves that he's even better? You know, you could have Zuccarello coming off. You'd have some other space being freed up. Would they consider re-signing Kevin Hayes, even though the cost would be a little more? Maybe they could possibly put Zibanejad up available. His 5 point, I think it was to make 5.3 AAV. He would only have 2 years remaining after this year. And maybe they say, you know what, why don't we use Zibanejad for stock way up and maybe get some scoring wings, because they don't have enough scorers that can finish on the wing. They're hoping Jimmy Vesey, and I'm hoping too, because I like the way he plays the game, but he's got to do better than 16 or 17 goals. He's got to do better than his minus whatever it was. Was he a minus 16 or 17? I understand he was moved up and down and jerked around by Vino, but he needs to be putting up 20 to 25 goals, and he needs to be putting up about 40 to 45 points. You know, I mean, the cost wasn't a lot, but they need him to step up. You know, Jesper Fast will bring it and probably give you, as long as he stays on the ice, between 15. He could score 15 to 16 goals now and put up 30 to 35 points. But the Rangers need other guys. They need Buchnevich to not just be a passer. Yeah, Buchnevich should get 30 assists in his sleep, because he's that good a passer. I have him getting about 36 or 37 assists. I think he'd get about 37 assists with maybe 18, 17, 16 or 17 on that power play. 14, 29, 43 is not bad production for a guy that sometimes moved on the fourth line and only a minus three. So, but he needs to shoot the puck more. He's got to shoot the puck more too, all right? Or he will drive some fan nuts like myself, because he needs to shoot the puck. He's a little selective. He does have that pass first mentality, kind of like Zuccarello. So it's like, why the hell do you need Zuccarello on the roster when you got Buchnevich? But you still want to have Zuccarello around for his leadership qualities, and I do understand that. Now Pavel Buchnevich is 23. He'll be entering his second full year. He played 41 in his first year. This will be his third season. So, you know, I want to see improvement. I want to see 19 to 20 goals. Why not 21 goals if he increases the shot selection and puts up, if he could score 20 goals and put up 36 or 37 assists, then that's 57 points, and they can give him a nice brand new spanking contract. And give him and pass up bridging him. Give him give it 6 years to him, and pay him what he's worth. Then that would make a lot of sense. So there are some question marks when it comes to the finishing ability on this team. Lastly, all right, so I'm done with the Rangers, and I just wanted to just touch quickly on Sam Darnold, who now has finally signed with the New York Jets. I think it was just a matter of time. I mean, really, what was he going to do? Not sign? I mean, you know, eventually the two sides were going to get together. You know, Sam Darnold wasn't going to just duck them forever and just, oh, well, because of the guaranteed money. I mean, come on. You have to remember, he is a first-round pick. And, of course, it sometimes takes time when they negotiate these things. So Sam Darnold gets $20 million guaranteed on his rookie contract. It's a $20 million signing bonus. and $30.25 million contract, and it's fully guaranteed and includes the $20 million signing bonus. So it's a four-year contract, $30.25 fully guaranteed with the $20 million signing bonus. So it's done, and now he can get into camp, and he missed 2 or 3 days. So, and if, you know, now we got to see, you know, how good is he? I like him. I like him a lot. So we'll see how he does. You know, there's other quarterbacks, of course, in that Jets camp, including Teddy Bridgewater, who they signed, and of course, they brought back my guy as well. So, but it's good for the Jets and for Jets fans to have a little bit of excitement. Yeah, it's nice for them to know that they were able to get him signed. So it's not just going to be Josh McCown, and it's not just going to be Bridgewater. You know, maybe they'll see Darnold. You'll see Darnold at some point this year, which would be good. Maybe around week 9, hopefully. So that's good. That's a good thing for the Jets and the Jets fans, because for a long time they've suffered. I'm a Giant fan. I'm spoiled. And when I hear that Eli Apple might be poised for a breakout year and that he's actually focused, and if I wanted to just throw him away after how he acted last year, well, it just goes, he's got a clean slate under Shermer. And I hope that it does work out for Apple. He was a first-round pick. So I'm hoping that it does work out. But that's going to do for this podcast. I hope people did enjoy it. If you did, check out our future podcast. Check out some of my future shows. www.blocktalkradio.com/hardhits21. All right, that will do it for this podcast. Enjoy the baseball trade deadline. I don't think anything will happen with Bryce Harper. I made one prediction. So the return of the Grandy Man to the Bronx. That's going to do it. I'm Derek Felix from the Hardhits Network. Thank you for tuning in. Have a good rest of your day. Enjoy your Tuesday.